This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Rising tensions between the U.S. and China, as well as better than expected weekly crop ratings. Those were the two big stories that weighed on the commodity market trade on Tuesday's session. Welcome into Market Talk. Thank you so much for joining us, making us part of your day once again. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you here with us as we take a look at what happened in Tuesday's trade action, and a lot to look at once again here. No shortage of stories to talk about in the markets as we get into this month of August, headlined on Tuesday by rising tensions between the U.S. and China over House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. That seemed to be the big driver in the trade early on Tuesday's session. Reuters reporting that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi landing safely in Taiwan with Chinese warplanes flying nearby, as China was doing that in a bit of a show of force, and really just a lot still on the table here with China's response to U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visiting Taiwan. The markets did not really expect a direct confrontation, but they were nervous about the possibility of a misstep, and we saw that bringing some tension to the market with risk-off tones through Tuesday's trade, although we did see an easing of tensions on Wall Street and in turn across the commodity sector on Tuesday. Couple that with better than expected weekly crop ratings from USDA, which saw nationwide corn ratings stay the same, 61% good to excellent. Soybeans, spring wheat actually went up a point and 2 points respectively in the good to excellent rating. Now, we did lose some ground in the Western Corn Belt, which has been hot and dry, but the Eastern Corn Belt made up for the national average. So a lot to look at there with those two stories. We're going to dive in and talk about them coming up with Brian Split of Ag Market.net joining us in segment 2 and 3 here on the show today to discuss what he is seeing in the market trade. I know we'll touch on those stories and more. Also coming up at the end of the show today, we have some other stories in the world of agriculture we're keeping an eye on, including farm lending and interest rates rising in the second quarter. Also, 2021 farm production expenses surpassing $390 billion. On top of that, House Ag Chair David Scott's new bill, the Small Family Farmer and Rancher Relief Act. The NCBA, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, they've responded to that new bill from House Chair David Scott. We're going to get their reaction coming up in segment 4 as well. First, though, let's get thoughts with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX. We start our discussion from Tuesday midday talking about the China news and its impact on the market trade.
Yeah, there was a lot of nervousness this morning in the global markets as a whole, worried that we might be on the cusp of war with China. And talking to one of my employees in Shanghai this morning, she said the tensions were high there, worried about it. All the information they get comes from state-run media there, and state-run media was pretty high with its threats. And is running live fire military exercises in the Straits of Taiwan and in the waters really surrounding Taiwan. So the rhetoric and the exercises really felt like on the cusp of war. I don't think anyone in the markets really expected us to have a move toward war, but when tensions are so high, that always leaves the opportunity there for an error, a misstep by someone, a misinterpretation or something like that to get you into a conflict. And so there was some nervousness, but with her having landed and the events unfolding, there's a little bit more of a sigh of relief. relief. The outside markets are starting to reflect that. And we're seeing wheat and soybean prices come well off of their lows, double digits off of their lows. Corn is continuing to struggle, though, kind of a sense of traders saying, okay, July is behind us. July rainfall overall for the Midwest is near average, even though that was an average of extremes. Temperatures weren't that far above normal when you average it all out. And so they're really having trouble seeing how we're going to have a problem with the crop. A little bit more concerned about soybeans, but everything pretty much still in negative territory at midday.
Well, Arlen, as well, as we take a look here and look at this week's crop ratings, I mentioned those. I was kind of surprised that we held steady and even increased. Some areas saw some rather big jumps. I know North Dakota corn, for instance, saw a big jump here this week. But overall, you look at those crop ratings, we look at the heat in the forecast for the Western Belt and maybe some moderation in the Eastern Corn Belt. What stands out to you as we look at the latest forecasts is I would think there's still considerable worry out west.
Yeah, North Dakota was the exception. And the crops up there do look good. They're getting the ridge running showers going over the top of the ridge. The heat is not as extreme in North Dakota as it is further to the south, although they're having some heat now. But it's more temporary than it is further to the south. And so North Dakota is kind of the exception. Overall, we still saw a decline in ratings in the Western Belt, but that was more than offset by gains in the Eastern Belt. And so that's going to be really the key this year, is to see how those gains are able to continue to keep up with offsetting losses in the West. We still see a lot of problems. I expected that the losses would be a little bit more significant in the West to still give us negative national numbers yesterday slightly, but I wasn't surprised by the numbers we got considering the week that we had last week. I think that we'll see a little bit more problems as we go through this week and the next. We're going to see more chances for rain in the east, probably moderating temperatures in the east with more concerns and problems in the west going forward. And so it's going to be the haves and have-nots and see how they balance each other out for the size of this year's crops.
And again, that's comments with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX. I talked to Arlen around midday on Tuesday for our Market Talk Midday commentary and got his thoughts on price action from Tuesday's trade. Markets did their best to moderate as we went through the session. We're going to talk about all of it more coming up with Brian Split of AgMarket.net in just a little bit. I want to go back to this week's crop progress numbers. Again, a bit of a surprise to some in the trade. Corn condition nationwide staying the same at 61% good to excellent, 1% percentage point lower than this time last year. Big jump for North Dakota corn, 79% good to excellent, now the best in the country, up 5 points on the week. In second place, Wisconsin, 77% good to excellent, down 2 points from last week. Iowa falling to third place, down 4 points on the week at 76% good to excellent. Illinois gaining 3 points on the week, up to 74% good to excellent for corn. South Dakota's at 65% good to excellent. Minnesota, 63%. Nebraska, 54% good to excellent. Big drop in Colorado corn conditions, down 13 points to just 23% good to excellent, reflecting some of those big losses we're seeing in the Western Corn Belt. Meantime, soybeans went up a point, 60% good to excellent nationwide as of Sunday. You look at soybeans in North Dakota, 63% good to excellent. South Dakota, 65%. Minnesota, 66%. Nebraska, 57%. Iowa, 73% good to excellent. And Illinois soybeans at 68% good to excellent, up 7 points on the week. Kentucky, the big mover, up 14 points on the week, 42% good to excellent. And lastly, spring wheat nationwide, 70% good to excellent, up 2 percentage points from last week. North Dakota spring wheat, 80% good to excellent. South Dakota, 56%. And Minnesota at 82% good to excellent as of Sunday, July 31st. So, again, some surprising moves to the upside in our crop ratings for the week. We're going to discuss that and more coming up with Brian Split of AgMarket.net. He joins us next as we're back with more market talk on the way right after this.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now as we take a look at Tuesday's market trade action, highlighted by the tensions between the U.S. and China. That kind of weighed on the markets. It was the big story weighing on the markets on the day, it seemed. We're joined now by Brian Split of AgMarket.net. Brian, always great to have you on the show. How are you, sir?
I'm great. It is always good to be here, Jesse.
Thanks for the time, Brian. Let's jump right in. Yeah, again, it felt like the markets on Tuesday were just focused completely on this China-U.S. tensions over Taiwan, over Speaker Pelosi's visit there. I know there's other factors, but all these tensions, it just kind of felt like that was the overriding factor throughout Tuesday's trade. The nervousness maybe backed off a little bit as we got to the close, but still, it was there, Brian. What are your thoughts on this whole situation and its impact on the markets right now?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely was some trepidation earlier in the session. I don't know that we've ever really had a scenario before where people and traders are watching a flight tracker to see if a plane lands or what happens with it. And it definitely had the potential to be a situation that could turn into something, and it still could. But she's on the ground right now. And so, you know, after the plane landed and there was no event, there was a little bit of a relief rally in the grains, in the equities, and then kind of late in the session, everything started to soften back up again. So, you know, I don't know what the objective is, what the goal is of the trip, democracy, right? But I think it's probably a big distraction. I know it's a distraction for the people in China when you've got a Speaker of the House of a foreign country come to Taiwan and they've got their air raid sirens going on. And, you know, not to mention, these are people that can't take money out of their bank, you know, bought a house recently and now it's worth 20% less and they still don't live in the house. So maybe they need a bit of a distraction. I guess I'm wondering what the distraction is for us.
Well, and you brought that up with the money situation. I know we've seen some Chinese economic data this week that doesn't look too good. You coupled that with the potential here. What does China do to retaliate? We saw them with some military exercises on Tuesday, but I know some folks in the trade are floating the notion, could China, you know, lessen its imports of U.S. grain? Could they try to go to South America more or Russia, et cetera, et cetera? Does that feel like it could be a realistic retaliation that we have to watch for the markets here, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, anything's realistic nowadays. If you could think of it, it's possible. We've seen China before during our own trade war reduce imports of U.S. product and increase imports of Brazilian product. We know China's bought an awful lot, so it's hard to always know how much they need versus what they have. You know, do they get some cushion? Are they tight? But, you know, over the last couple of years, they've done an awful lot of purchasing. So maybe they've got enough going on where they can not purchase as aggressively. And then not to mention, you know, we're going to be looking at the South America crop upcoming that'll be planted relatively soon. And if Brazil has decent weather, they're going to be, you know, growing 150 million ton soybean crop. And that'll be a record by far. That'll be roughly 25 million tons more than they produced this year because they had the drought. But we'll see an expansion in acres there. And if we end up seeing that size of a crop out of Brazil this winter, gosh, I mean, you have to imagine that our exports on the second half of our marketing year are going to suffer tremendously.
Well, it feels like here starting the month of August, we kind of flipped a switch for some reason, and especially that soybean market. I want to talk about that a little bit. Monday, we came in here, we gave back a good chunk of our final week of July rally in that market. I think we're up like $1.50 in beans or whatever through the final week of July. You look here Monday into Tuesday, we gave back some more in soybeans. What are you seeing in the soy market? What are the charts telling you? Does it feel like we're maybe trying to settle into a range here possibly, Brian? What are you seeing right now?
Quite possibly a big trading range, absolutely. You know, when you think about the low that we had, that we rallied from, that was down at what, 1288 and a half, and then we went and made a high at 1489, so we had about a $2 trading range established in the matter of a week. And so today, we closed back below the 200-day moving average, which generally has been a little bit of a pivot between being bullish and being bearish from the trade perspective. We do have a gap to fill below us on November soybeans at 13.49 and a quarter. So that undoubtedly is still going to be an objective below the market to go and fill that gap. But right, I mean, do we just take this thing back down to the low 13s, hold that area again, and then maybe start to float back up in anticipation of the August report, which is August 12th? I think you could see something similar in corn. We've got a gap at 584 and a quarter, not very far away after making some new lows late in the session today.
I know as well, the soy meal market, that's remaining strong, Brian. Domestic demand is solid. That seems to really be supporting us. And we've seen a big run-up in meal here the last couple of weeks. And as you look at the product market, what are your thoughts there and how that's helping out the soy market here, the soybean market?
Yeah, that I think was a big part of the rally that we had off the lows was the fact that the soybean meal market was running with it. I think we also had, from a timing perspective, some help from the August contract going into delivery. Somebody was getting squeezed from the short side there. We had August meal make new contract highs, not by a little, but by quite a bit. And, you know, once that squeeze, you know, ends, I think you're going to lose that support from the meal market. But as you mentioned, cash meal market's very strong. I think you're going to continue to see good buying on dips and meal, especially if we see continued liquidation of the oil versus the meal as a trade on wines.
You mentioned corn. Let's move there. I feel like that range is maybe a little more defined than soybeans right now, but I wonder if we go back and maybe test some of those lows, get down around 570, 560s in corn. I know there's some room to go there as well, down to the downside, as you mentioned, but one has to wonder. I feel like $6 is kind of a number that we're going to hover around for a little while. What are your thoughts in corn?
Yeah, you know, I think this is the time of year where if we do make some new lows, it might be more in the sense of a downward trending channel where you've got lows that are kind of traveling along the same line. So I wouldn't expect, unless there's a general big picture market meltdown, if we do make new lows in corn at this stage, I think it's where you make a new low by, you know, 5, 6, 7 cents, and then you find some support. I do think end users are ready and willing to buy 550 corn. From a retracement standpoint, when you look at contract low to contract high, that 560 area does represent a 50% retracement of the whole move. If we go to the next retracement level, which is 62%, that's going to be around 520. So that would be the next retracement objective. But I guess to answer your question, one of the trades that we've been doing is we've been selling $6 corn straddles. Whenever you get the market to run up and the volatility increases on the corn options, those straddles have been going for over a dollar. Today they closed around 87, 88 cents. And that's two sessions after selling them Friday. You know, so that's been a really good trade. And I think, again, by and large, we're probably going to be supported at in the low fives, and we're going to see some selling when you see these pops up into that 6.25 to 6.50 range.
Overall, this weather pattern, of course, is a big story in the markets here, with the hot, dry weather setting up again in the Western Plains, maybe a bit better weather in the East with some more rain showers. I know we have various crop tours coming up through the month of August, Brian. I see pictures on social media from various parts of the country of some crops looking really good, some not looking so good. I mean, as we move forward, we look at weather and we start to wonder what those yields are going to look like for corded soybeans. I would have to think we might not see it in August, but September and beyond, USDA, I'd have to think some of those numbers have to come down just from what I'm seeing and hearing. What are you seeing and hearing in respect to what this crop is looking like across the country?
Right. So the USDA is currently using a record yield in soybeans and a yield that matches the previous record in corn. And, you know, we know that in order to get that corn yield, we had, I believe, five states make a record yield that year. So it's tough because it's the haves and the have-nots. You know, I was reading, and I don't know if this is correct or not, but you could lose 12 bushels an acre in Ohio and make that up with 2 bushels in Illinois. So it's the weighting of who produces more. And that's what we're going to be figuring out over the next couple months. Now, what we've been used to in the previous years is the USDA giving us some field survey results as part of the August yield. And that's not happening. They don't do that anymore. So it's just going to be satellite data. And then we'll get into the actual field survey type results in September. So I agree with what you're saying. We're probably going to see the needle move a little bit more in September. And maybe that makes this report in August be a little bit disappointing to bulls, where the USDA might not change the yield as much as what some of the bulls think they should. But we're going to be looking at a lot of these private yield forecasts, and just the range of estimates in yield from some of the low-end estimates to upper-end estimates tells me the trade really isn't quite sure either.
And that's Brian Split of AgMarket.net. We'll continue our conversation coming up next, back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Jesse Allen with you here today. Our guest analyst, Brian Split of AgMarket.net. We're going to get back to our conversation with Brian coming up here in just a minute. We're going to take a look at the wheat markets, look at livestock as well. That's all coming up here as we continue on today's show. I want to take a look at Tuesday's closing numbers, though, to give you an idea where things wrapped up in the trade. Starting in grains, corn September 15 and three quarters lower, 591 and a quarter. December corn 15 and a half lower, 594 and a quarter. March corn was down 15 at 601 and three quarters. Soybeans August 25 lower, 1569 and a quarter. September down 16 and a quarter, 1415 and three quarters. November beans 19 and a half lower, 1386 and a half. August bean meal up 220 a ton, 489.20. September up 450 a ton, 434.20. Bean oil for August down 103 points at 65.20. September down 176 points at 62.33. Chicago wheat September 25 and a half lower, 774 and three quarters. December down 25 at 794. September Kansas City wheat down 24 and a quarter at 842 and a quarter. December down 23 and three quarters, 850 and a quarter. September spring wheat 24 and a quarter lower, 873 and a quarter. December down 24 at 886 and a quarter. September oats 19 and a half lower, 421. December oats down 19 and a quarter, 416. Canola down 51.30 at 841.50 on the day as well. Looking over at the livestock trade, moderation in the hog market on the day. Lean hogs for August down 60, 119.85. October hogs down 60, 96.22. December 2 higher, 87.75. February up 15, 90.95. April hogs up 12, 93.75. Feeder cattle August down 152, 178.12. September down 165 at 181.45. October feeder cattle down 127, 184.20. November feeders 87 lower, 186.07. Live cattle August down 20, 136.57. October down 50, 142.12. December live cattle down 22, 148.27. February live cattle 25 lower, 152.77 on the day Tuesday. Looking over at the cotton market as well, keeping our eyes on what's going on there. We saw cotton up 58 points, 187 for October. December up 75 points, 94.81 on the day. Coffee trading lower. Sugar was fairly quiet on the session as well on Tuesday. Energy sector, again, crude oil moderating up about 1% on the day. Nat gas, that was trading down around 50 to 60 points on the session. Also saw a report, according to Bloomberg, Saudi Arabia increased production to 10.8 million barrels per day in July, the most since April of 2020, as we see OPEC set to meet on Wednesday. So we're going to be watching that as well as we move forward in the market trade. All right, let's get back to Brian Split of AgMarket.net joining us here today on Market Talk. Brian, let's talk the wheat markets as well here a little bit. Fairly rough day on Tuesday in wheat. And, you know, we've lost a lot of that war premium and then some, but the wheat markets as well, kind of doing wheat things. Feel like we're finding a range here. What do you make of everything you're seeing with Chicago, KC, and Minneapolis wheat?
Well, I would say that one of the things I'm watching from a chart standpoint in the Chicago wheat is the potential for a head and shoulder bottom. The last two peaks that we have in Chicago wheat look like it could be forming a neckline. I believe this December contract, if that's the one we're going to think about, if that were to come down maybe another dime or so, that would line up nicely for a right shoulder. And so if we kind of went down that 10 cents, caught, and then took out recent highs, and that's what you have to do. You have to take out the highs in order to validate the pattern. But that would be a potential head and shoulder bottom. I could see that happening just for a couple reasons. I mean, typically we should be finding some kind of a harvest low. I think we're seeing some short-term pressure on the idea that Ukraine's getting some product out of the country. But still, when you look at Lloyd's of London and the insurance company that's insuring these vessels, they'll insure the boats leaving the country, but I don't think they have a plan to have new vessels insured to come back to then load up again and then leave again. So now I'm going to be questioning, okay, once all these boats leave and they have the product, will new boats come back in? Will new crews come back in? And what does that look like? And I think that's still up in the air. But one of the other things here, the producer in Ukraine needs to get their wheat to the export channel to get paid. And depending on whether that happens for them or not, will dictate whether they have cash flow to plant this next wheat crop that they would be planting later this month into September. So these are all things that are going to be very important over the next several weeks.
Couldn't agree more. Let's move to livestock, Brian. Looking at things on Tuesday, I feel like cattle and hogs both kind of got caught up in the China-U.S. tensions amid other factors. But you look at cattle on Tuesday, feeder cattle down a little bit, feedlot country pretty quiet. Anything stand out to you in the cattle markets right now?
I think it's almost the opposite. It's almost like nothing stands out, right? I mean, you look at December live cattle futures, and we settled today, I believe, about 5 points less or lower than we had settled on February 2nd. So here we are, 6 months later, we're at the same exact price. We really haven't gone anywhere, which if you're an option seller, that's great, right? You've just been collecting time value on live cattle. But I think it's this constant struggle between, okay, we know there was liquidation in the herd. We know numbers have tightened up. The world's concerned about not only the world economy, but also domestically here, recession. We can argue whether it's a recession or not, because that seems to be pretty in vogue right now. But I think that's the constant struggle of the live cattle market. In the meantime, we're just not really doing anything. We're catching these, you know, go up a couple bucks here, a couple bucks down there, but we're not going anywhere in the big picture. Now, if I'm looking at the feeder cattle chart, something I'm mindful of right now, especially if I have risk to the downside, is if we take out 178 in the September contract, that'll look like a little bit of a head and shoulder top there. So anybody that has some risk to the downside on feeder cattle might look at providing a floor for themselves at that 178 level. I think that would just look negative if we took that out. And otherwise, I just to be honest with you, I haven't really been focusing too much on the livestock because there's been a lot more movement in the grains. And like I said, cattle's been kind of in the same price here for the last 6 months.
And I would say as well, hogs too, kind of in the same boat. That August contract's been strong. Cash has been strong. Cutouts have been strong. But I think hogs just getting caught up in the same kind of trends here as well, especially today with China and assessing that weekend demand as well. If you've seen any thoughts on the hog market there, Brian.
Yeah, I think the future demand from China is going to be a concern in not only hogs, but a lot of different markets. You know, we touched on that earlier in the segment here, just about the weak economic data coming out of China. So you have some commodities that are more China centric than others, soybeans, lean hogs. And I tend to, you know, group energy into that as well. I mean, energy is important for everybody, but when you have such a powerhouse that has so much usage like China does. So one of the things I'm watching in the energy markets is that potential head and shoulder top in the heating oil. That for us would be a proxy for diesel fuel. There are other countries, obviously, that use that to heat their homes. But what does it mean if heating oil takes out its neckline and breaks another buck? I tend to think that that's going to be a negative signal for commodities in general if that's were to happen. So again, these head and shoulder patterns are not the pattern until they break the neckline. But I think it's something well worth watching. And that neckline on the October heating oil contract is going to be right around that 3.25 area.
Brian, great stuff. Any other final thoughts you have for us? I know a lot of volatility remaining out there. Anything else you want to add today?
Oh, I love these open-ended questions right at the end, Jesse. Yeah, you know what? It's just the market's been making these big moves. So, you know, if you want to sell it at a certain price or you want to buy it at a certain price, put your order out there. Don't tell your broker or tell somebody to call you when it gets there because you might be in a line of other people. I believe in alarm clock orders. If you want to sell five at a price, put one there, make your broker call you when it gets filled because he has to, and then you can decide if you want the other four. And I think that's a good way to go about it if you don't want to have the whole kit and caboodle all at one price.
I got to give an open-ended question every now and then to make sure I didn't miss anything, Brian. That's
yeah, of course.
I know if folks need some advice, they can reach you and the team there at agmarket.net very easily by going online, giving you a call. A lot of different ways to get in touch, can't they?
Yeah, the general line is 844-4-AG-MARKET, so 844-424-6758. My direct line is 815-665-0463. The website is www.agmarket.net, and we have the app, agmarket.app.
With that, Brian Split from agmarket.net. Always appreciate the time, sir. Thanks so much, and have a good one. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Jesse.
And again, that is Brian Split with agmarket.net, our guest analyst here today on Market Talk. Always appreciate Brian being a part of the show with us here. And again, you can learn more online, agmarket.net. Find their number, give them a call if you are looking for some advice, as well as check out their app in the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store here today. Well, again, the market's closing with weaker undertones on the day Tuesday. They did moderate off the lows of the session, but again, all the woes with the U.S. and China tensions with Nancy Pelosi visiting Taiwan, that was the biggest weight on the markets on the day, and that's something we're going to be watching moving forward. What will happen with the tensions? Will there be more retaliation from China? Was their military exercises the only retaliation that we would see? This is a developing story we're going to watch closely. You throw in the weather, of course, we're keeping our eye on the latest weather forecast as hot temperatures are spreading across the plains. Western, Midwest, and Delta here this week with triple-digit heat being likely at a lot of areas, and the heat's going to reduce soil moisture and stress crops and livestock. Precipitation is going to be limited across the upper Midwest and Ohio Valley down into the southeast, but more moderate temperatures seen in the eastern Corn Belt. So a lot of things going on, plus whatever's happening with the Black Sea region. That's always an ongoing story with the grain shipments out of Ukraine. So plenty to keep our eyes on in the market trade. We'll be watching it as we move forward. Speaking of keeping our eyes on what's going on in agriculture, though, coming up next, we're going to take a look at some of the other top news stories across ag headlines here today, including NCBA's reaction to House Ag Chair David Scott's proposed bill, the Small Family Farmer and Rancher Relief Act. We're going to get comments on that from Tanner Beamer from NCBA coming up here, as well as take a look at some other stories, including 2021 farm production expenses surpassing $390 billion and farm lending and interest rates rising in the second quarter. Those stories and more coming up next as we're back with more Market Talk right after this.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Appreciate you being with us here once again today. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Thanks for making us part of your day as we take a look at some of the latest headlines throughout the world of agriculture. Larger loans continue to boost lending activity in the second quarter of 2022, while farm loan interest rates edged higher. The Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City says the volume of non-real estate agricultural loans grew steadily alongside an increase in the number and average size of loans. Interest rates remained historically low but continued to increase in recent quarters and on nearly all types of farm loans as benchmark rates continued rising. Now, the average maturity of some types of loans, particularly for real estate, also increased during the quarter and was above recent historic averages. The Kansas City Fed says farm lending activity showed signs of rebounding from the pullback in recent years and could grow further in the coming months as the higher costs of many major inputs continue impacting farmers. Persistent pressure from higher production expenses could squeeze profit margins going forward and drive demand for credit higher. Now, in 2021, USDA says farm production expenses hit $392.9 billion, higher than the $366.2 billion in 2020. That's a 7.3% rise from 2020 to 2021. The four biggest expenditures totaled $189.4 billion, just over 48% of all expenses last year. Those four are feed at 16%, Farm services at 11%, livestock, poultry, and related expenses at 10%, and labor at 9.4%. The total fuel expense was $12.9 billion in 2021. Diesel is the largest subcomponent and totaled $8.4 billion in expenditures, accounting for 65% of the total fuel outlay. Diesel expenditures were 18% higher than in 2020. Gasoline expenses totaled $2.4 billion, 22% higher than the previous year. LP gas expenses rose to $1.4 billion in 2021, an 11% jump from 2020. Crop farm expenditures were $207.6 billion, up 6.2%, and livestock farm expenditures increased to $185.3 billion, up 8.5% in 2021. Now, as far as the Plains region, farm and ranch production expenditures totaled $99.2 billion in 2021. The USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service says that's up from $85.3 billion in 2020. The Plains region includes North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. Now, these results are based on data collected this year from farmers and ranchers in the Plains region who participated in the Agricultural Resource Management Survey conducted by USDA NASS. Producers were contacted in January through April to collect 2021 farm and ranch expense data. Turning our attention to the cattle industry, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association says it's not ready to back an alternative cattle competition bill by House Ag Chair David Scott, but adds it's a much better starting point than the Grassley alternative. NCBA opposes Senator Chuck Grassley's Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act, but the group's Tanner Beamer says NCBA isn't ready either to back House Ag Chair David Scott's Small Family Farmer and Rancher Relief Act.
There are a couple blind spots, but it is a far more preferable product and is a much better starting position than is the Grassley-Fisher bill.
Which Beamer complains mandates regional negotiated cattle pricing while Scott would boost funding for a popular livestock insurance program. But Scott's cutoff for help is for cattlemen raising 100 or fewer head.
It has certainly been a difficult couple years for cattle producers in that category, but it has also been a difficult year for cattle producers who, for example, may raise or market between 101 and 250 head of cattle per year, which most of us in the cattle business would consider to also be small family producers.
Chairman Scott said bills by his colleagues don't stress direct help for farmers and ranchers. Scott's bill would boost livestock risk protection premium subsidies for small ranchers and create USDA indemnity and direct-to-consumer marketing programs. Those would help to boost competition and offset large price spreads. Another story we continue to watch is what is going on with the rail industry across the country. The Federal Railroad Administration on July 28th announced a proposed rule requiring a minimum of 2 train crew members for over-the-road railroad operations. The FRA last tried to implement this rule back in 2016, but it was later shot down by the Trump administration in 2019. This story coming from DTN. The FRA said it would allow current one-person operations to be grandfathered in, like short lines or passenger trains, and would let railroads petition for new single-person operations following a federal review. They said there are some exceptions for certain low-risk operations and circumstances where mitigating measures are in place to protect railroad employees, the public, and the environment. U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg said, quote, "For the past few years, our rail workers have worked hard to keep people and goods moving on our nation's railroads, despite a global pandemic and supply chain challenges. This proposed rule will improve safety for America's rail passengers and rail workers across the country," end quote. Now, according to the FRA, this proposal would also enhance safety nationwide by replacing the existing patchwork of state laws regarding crew size with a uniform national standard. Without consistent guidelines, railroads may be subjected to different requirements in every state in which they operate, resulting in potential safety risks, operational inefficiencies, and significant costs. This issue is one rail workers have been fighting for during their ongoing contract negotiations. Rail unions have made it clear they want a permanent end to management's campaign for one-man crews, while workers want at least two-person crews as a permanent norm. Labor agreements have required two-person crews for nearly 30 years at the major railroads, but many short-line railroads operate with one-man crews already. And again, this is a story we're going to continue to watch very closely. Everything that is going on with the rail industry, service challenges to rural areas, and much more. We'll keep following it and keep bringing you the latest here on Market Talk. Well, we are out of time here today on Market Talk. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to have a conversation with Richard Fordyce, Business Growth Director of Agriculture at Osborne Barr Paramore, former USDA Administrator. Richard and I are trying to make it a habit of getting together once a month and talking about the current issues in the world of agriculture, what's going on with the markets, what he is hearing from farmers across the country, and much more. We'll have that conversation coming up tomorrow here on Market Talk. That's going to do it for the show today. Have a fantastic rest of your day. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up to date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.